Welcome to Monsters Among Us. I am your guide, Derek Hayes. Can someone tell me how it is nearly Thanksgiving already? The next thing you know, the holidays will be upon us. But let's still do what we can to cling to what's left of spooky season. Just a little longer. After all, it does get dark by 5 p.m. these days. Pretty near 4:30 around my parts. Either way, it's plenty of darkness for something sinister to slither near. And tonight I have an array of first-hand accounts and an abundance of anecdotal evidence. So what do you say we get started? To kick us off this evening, we begin in a state an Ohio boy like me tends to avoid this time of year. Well, at least we used to. It's a college football reference for those not in the know. At any rate, here is Ben's entry from that state up north.
Derek, my name is Ben. I'm from Grand Rapids, Michigan, and I've got kind of an interesting story I wanted to share. So when I was a kid, probably back in about 2002, 2003, my parents bought a new house outside of the small town that I grew up in, and we had about 3 acres of land. So the vast majority of that was woods, which, of course, you know, I had friends over all the time we used to play in. But if you walked back into the woods, there was an old red pine grove that looked like it had been used for telephone poles, is what I'm assuming, but had long since been abandoned. So the trees were far too big at that point to be used for poles, and a bunch of them had died or fallen over, been rotting. But the space was always really, really weird. And when you walked in there, all the trees were planted in rows. So it was a weird feeling. It felt really creepy. And I always felt like there was something out there watching me. And I never knew what it was because there obviously wasn't like a person out there or anything like that because it'd be way too easy to see them. But, you know, that area of the woods was always really silent for some reason. We used to find animal carcasses back there a lot, which was weird. We never found them anywhere else. And then one night I remember I had been out there and I kept thinking that I could see something out of the corner of my eye while I was out there. But I think it was later that night I ended up having a dream where I was out there in the woods and there was this creature probably 8 to 10 feet tall, and it was completely made of trees and rocks and vines and plants and things like that. And the only word I had back then to describe it was like some sort of elemental creature, because it didn't seem like it was human at all. And as I grew up and left there, I never had any thoughts about that again until just recently. In the past couple of weeks, I've been taking a lot more walks early in the morning and when it's light out. And every time I walk through a wooded area, I'm starting to have this feeling like I did back then that something is watching me. And I'm in areas that have a lot of traffic, that I can hear the highway, I can see the road, all these things that should make me feel safer, I guess. That I'm not in the middle of the wilderness or something, but it always feels like there's something watching me, and it never feels quite human. I'm just not sure how to describe it. I don't know if it could possibly be like maybe a nature spirit of some kind, or like a forest guardian that watches over that area. I don't know, but it seems to be following me places, because it doesn't matter which patch of woods I go to, I keep getting the same feeling. And I've tried multiple by now, but I guess I just wanted to share that, and maybe if there's somebody out there who has a similar experience or things like that, I would love to hear about it. So thanks. Love your podcast. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, Ben. Now, we had a similar grove of pine trees back in Ohio growing up. Technically, it was the old man's property. You know, the one with the scary German Shepherd. But when that guy wasn't around, we'd sneak back there. Explore around. Come to think of it, there was another one of these groves about a mile in the other direction. That one completely in the middle of nowhere. Now, unlike the tree grid that Ben explored, I don't know the purpose of the two that we found. But I can tell you this. We too got that strange feeling when walking through those small groves. It was an eerie silence for us, almost deafening in contrast to the surrounding deciduous forests. You know, I'd always chalked it up to the foot or so of pine needles that softened the sound waves. But also, like Ben, I grew up in a Bigfoot hotspot, so let's begin by exploring that option. Now, Michigan isn't exactly well known to be home of the big guy, but the state does come in 7th out of 50, according to a graph assembled from BFRO reports by satellite internet. A link to this map can be found in the show notes, so go see where your state ranks. Unless you're from Hawaii, in that case, you're going to be disappointed. But back to Ben's bewildering parable. I did a little digging to see if I could find a first-hand encounter from the area. I managed to find this clip from Mid-Michigan's WEYT, NBC News 25. And I should point out that less than 100 miles separates Ben from the location of the following experience.
I don't know nothing on earth that makes that noise.
Anthony Padilla is asking authorities to investigate what he first thought was a hunter in a ghillie suit on his wooded Midland property.
I gotta confront this guy. You know, I was a little nervous. He was all huge, like a basketball player mixed with a wrestler, football type size.
Padilla believes what he thought was a hunter is Bigfoot.
He started getting blurry. He started getting fuzzy. I see some antlers starting to evolve. Boom! He turned around. And it gave me a vision of a white deer's tail, two hooves jump away from me, try to make me forget what I seen.
Since the spiritual Bigfoot encounter years ago, Padilla has been leaving pizza boxes in the woods as bait.
He peeled the liner out.
Bigfoot enthusiast Matthew Smith is taking a harder look at the boxes that Padilla says Sasquatch has handled.
Just rolling them up, kind of making it look like there's a sign that it's been there. I noticed that there's a bunch of hair samples.
Padilla and Smith say their investigation without police is leading them to more people with the same claims in Midland County. They're asking people for help, information, and hope for police cooperation.
Then we can track it down and we can prove to the world that they do exist right here in Midland County.
Now, I can't help but think that the news might be having a little fun with these guys. But the witness seems convinced that he saw something. Now, the detail about it suddenly having antlers, hooves, and a deer's tail gives me plenty to feel skeptical about. But the howl he captured, now you probably missed it. The clip only plays a brief moment of it. I'll loop it a few times here, enhanced for volume only. So this howl that he captured is awfully reminiscent of another strange recording from somewhere in the state. This one from the crew of Animal Planet's Finding Bigfoot. As usual, I'll loop it a few times. Now, I can't say for sure that this is a Bigfoot yowling in the night. After all, the Great Lakes State is also said to be home of another howling, monstrous beast, the Michigan Dogman. So take your pick of monsters, Ben, And don't forget the local legend of the Ada Witch. But I'll let a listener submit that one for an upcoming Hometown Legends episode. That's right, believe it or not, the season finale is only 8 episodes away. So get those Hometown Legends in now. And a reminder, a Hometown Legend can be a lot of things. An eccentric local with a twisted past. A rumored monster lurking on the outskirts of town. Or a tragedy, a mass sighting, or any other supposedly true local legend. And when you do submit yours, be sure to mention early on that the submission is for Hometown Legends, so that I don't miss it. And how does one submit these tales, you ask? Well, dial up the 24-hour hotline at 1-888-608-NIGHT. That's 1-888-608-6444. Alright, back to the action. And this time we head south to Texas, where Gail has a tale waiting for us.
Hey, Derek. This is Gail from Central Texas. I'm calling because I just got finished listening to Season 7, Episode 14, and there was a gentleman by the name of Kyle that submitted a Black Panther story. I know you like big cat stories, so I actually have one via my now-deceased Uncle Joe. I have an Uncle Joe that lived in Orange, Texas, which is on the Texas-Louisiana border. I imagine that's pretty close to where Kyle is. And I would say back in the late 90s, early 2000s, one of the things that Joe liked to do was go up in the woods and just sort of kind of disappear for a couple of days, and that was his form of relaxation. So one night he was, I don't know exactly which river, but one of the rivers over there. What he would do is when he would camp out and sleep, he would sleep in a canoe. Well, he would anchor his canoe off the riverbank and usually have about like 10 or I guess 12 feet of slack. So that way his canoe would be in the middle of the river and he would be sleeping and he wouldn't be on the shore. And he would prop himself up with like, I think, a couple pillows and a blanket and just sleep on the canoe. Well, one night he was doing that and he was awoken. I guess he heard something lapping water. And he said he didn't even really have to move. He just, you know, shifted a little bit and opened his eyes. And right in front of him was, he described it as a black panther lapping water on the shoreline. And that's basically it. It was one night. Again, he's since passed, but it was in the late 90s, early 2000s. And it was only about maybe 12, 14 feet away from him. And again, it was middle of the night, good moonlight, so he could see exactly what it was. And since he really didn't move that much, he didn't alert the animal. And I guess that the wind was blowing to where it wasn't leaving his scent, you know, to the animal. But anyway, there it is. Another big cat story from East Texas to collaborate Kyle's story. Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Gail. Now, these Texas ABCs have me wondering if it's possible two similar species reproduced, creating a hybrid of sorts. After some careful digging, I managed to unearth an answer that may explain at least the Lone Star mystery felines. According to a Dr. Helmut Hemmer, he was able to create a hybrid specimen, half jaguar and half cougar, aka mountain lion, puma, etc. He described the cat as follows. They were more jaguar in shape and power, but covered in darker markings mixed with a tawny brown of a mountain lion. But that's not black, I hear you saying. Well, unlike cougars, jaguars seem to carry a melanistic gene, the gene that allows them to appear nearly completely black. So what if the jaguar on this occasion happened to be one of the black mutations? Would that create a creature similar to what Uncle Joe saw? And it may surprise some, but jaguars are believed to occasionally roam parts of southern Texas. So this scenario is at least possible. But unfortunately, I also learned that although the two species share territory all over South and Central America, the two monster cats rarely, if ever, meet in the wild. So take all that for what it's worth. And thank you, Gail, for the call. Okay, let's dip our toes in the more supernatural end of the paranormal pool with a story from Kathy in a town Sarah and I had intended on visiting right about now, but like most everyone else, we're not going anywhere. Well, hopefully, Kathy's tale from Salem will make us feel like we're already there.
Hi, my name's Kathy. I grew up in New England, and my story is in regards to a trip I made with some friends to Salem, Mass. My mom is originally from Salem, so I spent time there a lot on and off. We were all out one night. It was a roast beef place. I was driving, and then a friend of mine and another girl in the backseat. And he said, well, when we get out of there, I'm going to drive, and you can sit in the passenger seat, and Janine can sit in the back. So she sat in the back, and we drove, just decided to drive around while we were eating. And we ended up driving down towards the Salem Willows, which is a place that is filled with arcade games and places you can sit. This is back when I was probably 22, 23. Anyways, we ended up driving towards the Salem Willows, and when we got there, we drove down this one road, and when we got there, it was late. It was like 11:30, 12 o'clock, something like that, and we saw this group of people in the middle of this one-way street. It's like you can't really drive a two-lane down that one road, and they were all standing around a burn barrel, and it was going, and I thought, oh, maybe it's a bunch of homeless people or something like that. We got closer, and we were all three of us staring out the window, and when we looked, they were all wearing black hooded-type robes, and we were all, like, really shocked, and we didn't really know what they were doing, but they were all standing around the burn barrel or whatever type of barrel it was, and they looked at us, and two people took off, and all of a sudden, we took off, and out of one of the side roads came this huge car, and then I looked at it, and it was a black hearse-looking type of a vehicle, and the person driving it, I thought, looked like Billy Idol. He had blonde hair and a white face, and then when we got closer, we saw that his hair was like dyed white, and his face had white paint all over it, or makeup, whatever you want to call it. It kind of stopped, and we didn't see that they were following us anymore. Scary enough that it was a hearse. So after that night, we said, well, definitely never going back there, and not at night anyways, and kind of just forgot about it. Well, 2 weeks after that, I was at my mom's friend's with her, and her daughter came home, and she was parking her car in the driveway, and she'd come in, and she's like, you won't believe what I just saw. And we were like, what? What? And she's like, I just saw the weirdest car go by. She says it was this, like, hearse-looking black car, and the guy driving it kind of looked like Billy Idol. And we were like, oh, my God, because I lived four towns away and a good 40 minutes away from where this was. So I was like, how the hell did this guy even know where I lived? Long story short, I ended up selling my car after that. It kind of freaked me out enough that I never went back to that part of the Willows, and definitely not at night. I'm 55 now. It was probably 20 some odd years ago or longer. And that's my story. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks, Kathy. When I was 6 or 7, my aunt lived in Youngstown, Ohio, and we'd drive up and visit on occasion. And on the way up, we would pass the Ohio town of Salem. Now, I'm a bit embarrassed to say, but I actually thought that was the same Salem as legend, and feared the wrath of witches each time we passed. Now, I'll admit, I wasn't the brightest of children. But in regards to Kathy's experience, I'm curious if perhaps this was some sort of performance street art or something. I understand the area of Salem is quite touristy. Then again, the story gives me Lost Boy vibes, so they might just be vampires. Thanks again for sharing that entry. And maybe that Billy Idol lookalike is listening now. It can help clear all this up. Now, real quick before we dive into our next one. I haven't asked this in a while, but We have a lot of new listeners, so here we go. Please take a few moments to rate and review, 5 stars of course, on your platform of choice. And if your platform doesn't allow for reviews, share the show on your social media page, if you would be so kind. And now we tilt our gaze skyward, in hopes of seeing what Ray saw. But let's hope the visual is where the parallels stop. Here is his entry from the Buckeye State.
Hey, Derek. This is Ray up here in Northeast Ohio. Back in 1980, I get a call from my buddy John, dude I went to school with. He says, hey, I'm going out to Debbie's after supper. Do you want to go? I said, yeah. Debbie lived right across the Pennsylvania border. So we get out there and hanging out with Debbie a few hours, you know, playing records, catching up with her. And everybody had to get up for work in the morning, so we probably left there probably before 10. And John's driving down the road, and he makes a right-hand turn. And I says, hey, man, you took the wrong street. He says, oh, no, this is a shortcut. Now, some of these roads in rural Pennsylvania, it's just a dirt road cut through the forest. There's no lights, there's no street lights, there's no sidewalk, you know. And this road happened to have, there's a field off to the left-hand side. Probably about 100 feet of field, and then there's the woods. So we get about a quarter mile down this road, and we both see two lights right above the trees, just hanging there. Look like two car headlights about 12 feet apart, just floating above the trees. And if I remember right, I think I made a comment like, what are these idiots doing in a helicopter out here at 10 o'clock at night, you know? Well, John drove up a lot closer and rolled the window down, and there was no helicopter noise. There was no noise at all. And he stopped the car, he kept the motor running, he put it in park. And we're watching these lights, and I swear it couldn't have been 3 seconds after he stopped the car. These lights started drifting towards us real slow, but they're coming towards us. And man, I got a bad feeling. I felt like prey. Yeah, I felt like a rabbit being hunted. And I told John, maybe we ought to just, you know, get out of here. He says, check it out for a minute. So we're watching the lights. They're coming closer. By this time, they're right at the tree line. You know, there's maybe 100 feet left. And they're still coming closer, and I'm starting to get panicked. And I says, come on, man, we got to go. Let's forget about this. Let's get out of here. He said, relax, man. Let's check it out. Dude, as cool as a cucumber. And these lights are, they're coming towards us real slow, but they're heading our way. And man, I started getting panicked. I was pounding on the dashboard with my fist. I'm saying, please, John, we got to go. We got to get out of here. Finally, he just put that car in drive and put his foot in it. And he was flying down this dirt road, hitting those potholes. The car is bottoming out on its shocks. I think that's probably the fastest I've ever been in a car at that time. And he kept saying, are they following us? And I stuck my head out the window, and I said, yeah, they're following us. And by this time, he was panicked. The road came to a T, so there's a stop sign. John's skidding into this turn, and is making the turn, and a green beam of light came down to the ground, right to the left-hand side of the car. And after that, we don't remember the drive home. I mean, down into the Shenango Valley and then up into Ohio. The only thing I remember is walking into my parents' house and they're watching TV in the living room, and I walked in and says, "We saw a UFO." And I forgot about this for years. Now, how the hell could I forget about the scariest night of my life? How could I just forget about that? You know, it makes no sense. But that's what happened, man. And I've seen those lights one other time way out in a country road in Ohio, but I was about a mile away. And I just got the hell out of there. I wasn't going to wait around. That's it, brother. So keep up the good work, man. Later.
Thank you, Ray. That is a chilling experience. Now, there's something extra ominous about the way the craft slowly made its way over to the gentleman. If I'm honest, there are certainly parallels to both the Betty and Barney Hill abduction and the Travis Walton abduction. All three centered around a vehicle. All three witnessed the craft first, before it appeared to pay any attention to them. And all three seemed to involve a certain caliber of missing time. Now, I certainly don't feel qualified to confirm that these gentlemen were in fact taken aboard a UFO, but a lot of the telltale signs are there. Now, years ago, I would have recommended hypnotherapy, where the witness is hypnotized in order to retrieve buried or forgotten, or even cloaked memories. But the general consensus these days is that this method does more to create new memories rather than retrieve old ones. So unfortunately, I don't have any advice for you, Ray. Maybe someone listening has some insight that they can deliver. But thank you again for sharing that call. Now, real quick, we did a small batch of t-shirts featuring the new Mirrored Men design by talented artist and creator at Cryptid Zoo, Julian Meyer. So rush over to monstersamonguspodcast.com and pick up yours before they're gone. Now, we still have a lot of calls to get through, so let's dive back in. This next one takes us back to Michigan. This time, it's a message from Kat.
Hi, Derek. This is Kat from Michigan. So this happened about 2 weeks ago, and I'm not sure what to make of it. It was really strange. So I woke up, and it was broad daylight, you know, early morning, and I saw at the end of my bed, I saw this man's head floating, this blonde-haired man, and he had a cut below his eye, and instead of being like red or pink underneath, it was gray. But I saw this man's head floating above my bed, about a foot above my bed, and just slowly rotating clockwise. And it wasn't sleep paralysis. I sat up, I rubbed my eyes, I blinked. I was just trying to see, like, was I really seeing this? And it lasted for about a minute, just seeing this head slowly rotating above my bed. And slowly it just faded and disappeared. I don't know what to make of it, but it was just really strange. If anyone else has called in about floating heads, let me know. Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you, Kat. After listening to this one, I got curious. I was wondering what a ghostly, floating head even looked like. Now, I've seen an apparition myself, but his head seemed fully attached. So I did some digging and unearthed a clip that seems to show something very similar to what Kat had reported seeing. I've linked to the short video clip in the show notes. In the particular clip I found, which was shot at a supposedly haunted bar in New Mexico after hours, is pretty chilling. And as far as I can tell, it shows a human head manifest out of nowhere, then quickly dart to its left before disappearing altogether. The entire sequence only takes a moment or so. So go have a look, Kat, if this is even half as spooky as your experience. I can sympathize with you. And thank you again for sharing your submission. Next up, we venture to the state of Idaho, where Katie has a harrowing story to share.
Hiya, Derek. My name's Katie, and I'm from Idaho. I've called in a couple times before. It sounds a little weird. So every morning early, between 6 and 7, I go outside to water my garden, because especially in the summer when it's hot. I live in Idaho. It gets crazy. Anyway, I have a truck, a big truck, a Toyota Tundra. It's big enough to haul a camper. And I'm sitting there watering my garden like I do every morning. A couple cars go past, perfectly normal. And if you have a truck or you've ever been around a truck, you know the sound it makes when someone gets out of it. The way that the whole truck shifts, and it's like, and if someone jumps out of it, it does it really quick and loud. And it's like, oh yeah, somebody got out of the truck. Well, I'm standing there watering the garden, and my cat's next to me because she likes to come out. And all of a sudden, I hear the truck shift like something had something big, bigger than anybody in my family, because I've never heard it make this sound, like something jumped off the truck. And I whirl, and my cat whirls at the same time, and her hair's all standing up, and all the little hairs on my arm are standing up, and I whirl, and there's nothing there. The truck is rocking very slightly, like something just got off it. And like I said, it's a big truck. No cars had recently gone by. There were no people. There were no animals. I live across from an elementary school. There's a cow farm a little about 100 yards from that school behind a fence, but it's a suburb area, and I saw nothing. I mean, I walked around to look, nothing under the truck, nothing around the truck, and like I said, school parking lot right across the road. And all of the houses, they're all aligned, they're all 7-foot fences in front of them. It's total suburbia, nothing. And I looked on top of the truck, and there was nothing on top of it either. It was just the weirdest thing, and I felt like I was being watched. The hair did not go down until I went inside. 10 minutes later, when I went out to walk my dog, I still felt uneasy around that truck. I actually haven't gotten into it since. My wife thinks I'm a little crazy, but she also didn't see the truck move and hear it move with nothing coming off it, because nothing hit the ground. There was no sound of an impact, nothing running, just the whole truck shifting like badly, like somebody had jumped off it. I wish I had a video, because the sound it made, it was unnerving. But anyway, yeah, keep up the good work. I have no clue what that was. I wish I did, and at the same time, I don't. Thank you.
Thank you, Katie. No, I'm no mechanic, but I've been toying with vehicles my entire life. And I have an idea that could explain this strange experience. The rear of most pickup trucks have long bands of steel that suspend the rear axle, allowing it to give when you hit a bump. Otherwise, you'll be going through the roof with every pothole. Well, given that these springs, commonly known as leaf springs, are under tension, they occasionally split, crack, or even break, sometimes causing the vehicle to list suddenly, which, at least in my opinion, would make the vehicle look as though something large leaped from it. Now, this theory could also explain the lack of footfalls on the ground when the invisible object, quote-unquote, landed. And if Katie had not been in the truck yet, she may not notice the faulty spring. But this occurrence is fairly rare, especially for a sitting vehicle, I would imagine. And after all, she is located in the state of Idaho. So could this invisible culprit be her old pal, the Glimmer Man? Now, not that Katie alluded to that suggestion, but given her location and that location's history with the phenomena and the fact that she saw nothing, I felt responsible to point out that connection. So thanks again, Katie. Maybe my logical explanation can help ease your mind a bit. Or at the very least, go check your leaf springs. I have a couple more stories, but real quickly, I finally remembered to mention this. If the season 10 finale is fast approaching, then we know the season 11 opener is right behind it. And in keeping with the tradition, I'm calling out a certain group of individuals. This time around, I want to hear from those that work with water. Ferry boat captains, sewer inspector, water park worker, scuba diver, fishermen. I want them all. So call that hotline at 1-888-608-NIGHT and be sure to use the phrase water jobs early in the call so I can search your call out. And I'm going to address this real quick because I know I'm going to get some emails. I'd originally planned on making this the medical worker special, but with hospitals all over the country overflowing with COVID patients and resources low supply, I didn't want to add to the duties. So we will circle back to that once this is all behind us. I had several listeners reach out suggesting that topic. So, great idea, guys. Just bad timing. Now, this next one is kind of cool. We head back to the state of Texas and meet up with Brian for this one.
Hey, Derek, it's Brian. Recently I heard my buddies call in about my experience at the Fire Station Museum for your season opener. Figured I'd call in a story that we did together. So back when we were kids, we used to go and play out in the woods and do all that kind of stuff and make trails and things like that. This is all in Southeast Texas. And one day we were out there and we looked up and we saw this copper colored guy walking through the woods, but he wasn't making a sound or anything like that. And we figured we better see where he's going. And my buddy's house is right across the street from a house that behind it sits an old cemetery. And, you know, we're close to Galveston, where a bunch of history is over there and everything like that, but we're not actually in Galveston, Texas. So we followed it for a while and we could see it going towards this clearing. So we headed out and followed it into this clearing, and it turns out that it was this old abandoned cemetery, and it was a pretty creepy place to be. A bunch of old headstones and things like that. We didn't recognize any of the names or anything like that. We looked around for this copper man, and right as we thought maybe we should just head on out, we looked up and he had gone behind this giant headstone. So we followed over there just to see if anybody was trying to play a prank on us, and knew that we were always out in the woods, and all of our buddies knew that we were always out there. It was right behind our church. So we go over there, and there's nobody there. It's just gone. There's nobody there. There's no sign of where anybody could have gone. And, I mean, they could have possibly, if there was somebody there, gone into the woods, you know, just sat behind some trees or something. But I think we would have seen them, the angle we were standing at. I don't really believe in the paranormal. I've had my experiences, like the one in the firehouse and obviously this. But my buddy, he's big into it, and he's seen a lot of things. So, yeah, I figured I'd go ahead and call it in. And I think my buddy has actually told this story too, but his, I don't think he went as detailed as what happened. Turns out it was an old Civil War era cemetery. I don't think it was actually Civil War soldiers buried there or anything like that, but... yeah, our historical society claimed it as a historical site, and I don't want to give it away the name just to, you know, let the souls there rest at peace and whatnot. Yeah, Derek, I've started listening to your show. I've really enjoyed it so far. Keep up the good work, man. Bye.
Thank you, Brian. This one had me puzzled, but I knew what to do. I reached out to Kryptonauts Rob Murphy for help. If it's obscure creatures and cryptozoology you're looking for, Rob is your man. So thanks to Rob, I was able to learn the following. Brian and his buddies aren't alone in witnessing a strange metal monstrosity, but his next closest fellow witnesses are anything but close by. According to the website British Paranormal, an eerily similar entity was spotted and recorded in written history over 200 years ago in a village known as Portsmouth, England. The following first-hand accounts were recently discovered in the diary of a bookbinder who lived in the area at the time. On the 6th of September, 1798, an entry in the diary made reference to a tale that left the researcher dumbfounded. A human with metal skin had apparently been sighted by a local vicar whilst walking the country lanes near Farrington. The vicar claimed that the man was no more than 4 feet in height, with a sturdy, muscular body and a large, bulky head. His eyes were described as being like brightly polished shillings, glistering in the midday sun. He had no mouth, no nose, no ears, and he wore no clothes. Brand provided a lengthy and highly detailed account of the panic this creature caused in the surrounding environs. He noted in the later entry that the creature had been spotted again, near the now reclaimed land of Tipner Lake. A young farmer's maid had been harvesting wild fennel when she beheld a man of metal flesh arise from the waters of the bay and walk several meters before retracing his footsteps and submerging beneath the still surface again. Initially, the researcher who was inspecting Brand's private diary assuaged his feelings of confusion by reckoning that the ancient bookbinder was insane, and the script that he now read was no more than the ramblings of a deluded and unwell mind. However, this comfort was soon swept aside when a second source emerged that proved Brand had been anything but a lunatic. A letter written by Dr. Jeffrey Bramwell attested to another panic in Portsmouth that focused on a flying metal man. In 1801, a group of a dozen or so Portsmouth townfolk gathered at an open-air location near Portsmouth city center to exchange goods and produce. No sooner than the wares had been carefully laid out, a local candlemaker let out a shriek of fear so loud it made a hatmaker fall giddy to the ground. The shriek was in response to a grim ghoul of terrible countenance, replete with a skin of copper. The bizarre creature emerged from a nearby copse, then launched itself like a golden bird into the sky, where it soon disappeared out of sight. Now, a copse is just a small grove of trees. So, there you have it, Brian. At least you're not the only one. Now, I wish I could do more to help you figure out what it is you saw, but I'll keep the lines open should any others pop up. So thanks again for sharing. And just a quick note that next week I'll be dark to celebrate Thanksgiving with Sarah. So check back on December 3rd for a brand new episode. And here we are, folks. The final call of the evening. And this one takes us to the state of Utah. Justin, tell us what you saw.
Hey, Derek. My name's Justin. I'm calling from Provo, Utah. I guess I don't know where to start. I don't know what category this experience falls under, but it happened back in 2006. I was 17 at the time, and it happened around, it must have been somewhere around 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night. I remember it being dark outside. I was just around the corner from my house, so I was in the city, and I was talking to my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife. I was talking to her on the phone, and I just see this pair of wings flying through the sky, heading from north to south, almost like directly above the street. So in the middle of my conversation, I just stopped talking to my wife, and I just look up, and I'm like, what the heck is that? And like, the best way I can describe it is just like these really long wings that seemed kind of skinny but feathery, but they were really long. And the weird part about it is I only could see wings. There was no head, there was no body. I could only see these giant wings. Like, when I say giant, they had to have been at least 10 feet wide, just slowly flapping in the sky. And I remember walking towards them. When I first saw them, I remember standing up off the curb and walking towards it. And, you know, like, I even did the rub my eyes to see, you know, if there was just something on my eyes. And they were still there. And I watched it for like 10, maybe 15 seconds tops as it just continued to head south and just vanished in the night. I don't know. I don't know what it was. I don't know how to explain it. Full disclosure, though, a month or so before this experience happened, I did watch Mothman Prophecies. And I'd never heard anything about the Mothman before. So yeah, anyways, after watching that, you know, this experience happened to me probably a month or so after that, after watching the Mothman movie. So I don't know if I saw something, you know, like, I don't know if I saw some, like, ducks or something that looked like wings, you know, the way they make that V shape. I don't know. It could have been something like that. And because I had watched the Mothman movie pretty recently, maybe my mind had correlated the two, trying to make sense of what I was seeing. Anyways, that's my experience. I really enjoy the podcast. I just started listening to you within the last month, and I've enjoyed it a lot. So thanks again. Hope you can share my story. Bye.
Thank you, Justin. I've narrowed down a few possibilities that could be blamed for Justin's encounter. I thought it would be fun to go through them one by one. Let's begin with his suggestion that it could be something akin to Mothman, the infamous winged precursor of doom, known to be seen in places like Point Pleasant, West Virginia, and Chicago, Illinois. Not a state like Utah. In fact, I couldn't find much credible evidence to support any sightings of the creature in the state. So for the sake of argument, I'm ruling the old Mothman out of this one. My next suggestion would be a legend that we've touched on from time to time. A beast of Native American origin and North American residence. The Thunderbird.
Thunderbirds are giant predatory birds with wingspans known, they're twice the size of what are recognized as large birds. The South American condor is the largest wingspan recognized, and these birds typically are twice that size.
There have always been stories about the existence of giant birds. In North America, giant birds are part of many First Nation traditions. We can often see them depicted on totem poles and in Native artwork.
The most famous name is Thunderbirds, because in the Great Lakes area and in the Pacific Northwest, it's in the spring when the storms return to the north lands and to places like from Ontario to British Columbia. That's when the Thunderbirds return. They migrate north back into those areas where they nest, and that's where the Indians have pointed to locations saying that's where the Thunderbirds used to nest.
According to First Nation tradition, Thunderbirds disappeared shortly before white men arrived in North America. However, eyewitness accounts seem to indicate that some of these huge birds may have survived up until now.
That clip is courtesy of the Canadian television series, Northern Mysteries. And although they're discussing Canadian locations, the Thunderbird legends persist in many places in the U.S., including the state of Utah. So as far as monsters go, the Thunderbird seems like a leading contender. But not if all these persistent pterodactyl reports have something to say about it. Reports like this one, out of Texas, recorded by friends of the show Lyle Blackburn and Ken Gerhard for the pilot episode of their series, American Monster Tour.
So thanks for meeting us. We really want to hear about your encounter. We've been investigating some others that had very close sightings of what appeared to be pterodactyl or pterosaur type creatures.
Well, I appreciate y'all giving me this opportunity. And I'm going to be honest, I've never told the story before. Because it's so unbelievable, I don't believe it, and I was there. We have this creek, the 10 Mile, that's about half a mile from my house, from where I grew up. This one little part, sort of an undeveloped area. We'd go ride our bikes and whatnot, but it was good for fishing, because the fish would come, some of the brim and carp would be caught in this one little deep pond. We're out there for a couple hours, a friend of me, and nothing's biting, so we're going packing up. He's ahead of me, and I'm walking back up the bank, and I hear a noise. I can only describe it as like an ugly crow or an ugly raven cry. And so I stop, because I've never heard anything like this. And I turn around, and at first I see what I thought is the biggest blue heron I've ever seen in my life. Because I'm like, this thing is huge. And then it gets about 5 feet from me, and I realize it has no feathers. It's just skin. And it's very leathery, and as it's pulling through, I realize it's a tail. and it has this big sort of triangular flange on the end of it. Mm-hmm. Of course, this thing's booking, right? It's not staying still, but there's this straightaway that we're on, and it flies and then banks and then disappears down the creek. Now, the creek's only 15, 20 feet wide, so I'm able to get a really good look at it from the back, and this thing's at least 10 feet wide as far as its wingspan goes, and maybe a little more, maybe 8 feet on the low end, but it's easily 10 feet. And it's just gliding and just banks on and disappears. I don't hear any more cries, and I'm just sitting there like, what did I just see? And my friend comes back, he's like, hey, what's going on? I'm like, I think I just saw a pterodactyl. And he's like, yeah, you're insane, and just walks off. And I'm like, well, no one's gonna believe me, so I just sort of file it away and just completely dismiss it myself until really a few years later when I started finding out there were sightings.
Now that entire episode, which pairs perfectly with this call, can be found for free in the show notes. Now, although that experience took place in Texas, like the Thunderbird, these pterodactyl sightings seem to persist all over North America. Yes, including Utah. I've included another link in the show notes of a few Utah boys that also claim to have seen something similar back in the early 2000s as well. But come on, a pterodactyl. They disappeared from the fossil record some 65 million years ago. And it's pretty hard to achieve that and survive to modern day. Which brings me to my third and final suspect. There's a marine bird known as the frigate bird. It's a large, sleek, black bird with a long beak and a split tail that resemble legs. The largest of the species can reach wingspans of close to 8 feet, and while flying, which is what they do a majority of the time, they look eerily similar to the distinct outline of what we now know as a pterodactyl. Now here's a sample of the male's mating call, courtesy of the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. Now tell me, these things don't sound like dinosaurs. Now I know what you're thinking. How can a marine bird be sighted in Utah? Well, I have an answer for that as well. I was able to find several confirmed sightings of these birds inland. Places like Oklahoma, Nebraska, and Utah's neighbor to the north, Wyoming. These birds are categorized as vagrant, which essentially means they're just wandering around. So in theory, the frigate bird too could find itself in the skies above the Beehive State, especially knowing there's a massive body of water just to the north in the Great Salt Lake. So you be the judge, which sounds like the best fit to you. And more importantly, Justin, Google the magnificent frigate bird, or check out the show notes, and let me know what you think. And thanks again for the submission. And that's going to do it for this episode. Monsters Among Us is written and produced by me, Derek Hayes. Additional support is provided by Sarah Carter Hayes and Addie Lloyd. All audio used in this production is done so under the protection of fair use. The creepy as hell score that you hear in the background is co.ag music and White Bat Audio. Thank you so much for listening, and until next week. Tonight's bonus story comes to us anonymously by way of Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, I'm a first-time caller. My partner told me about this station. Man, I've just been listening to it very often. I went back to season one today for my first time, but I picked up on season eight and whatnot. Well, anyways, I'm in Portland, Oregon. I want to remain anonymous for certain reasons. I'll call in some other time, talk about some other stuff. But, man, it's about 17 minutes ago, so about 10 o'clock, September 26th on a Saturday night. Clear skies, beautiful stars is out. You know, it's not, I was just looking up at the stars and never see the stars is out. The wildfires finally calmed down and got some good rains. So I sleep with the windows open all the time, every night. I mean, even if it's raining, I sleep with the windows open. I like fresh air. And I'm looking up at the stars, and out the corner of my eye, I keep seeing through my screen, it looks like, I'm thinking there's a glitch on the window. Through the screen, I'm seeing like a zigzag up and down, up, down, left, like an L shape, up, down, left, up, down, left. I'm like, all right, man, let me just, let me tilt my head some, see if there's a little star right there, something floating around in the sky, not too far from a Navy base, you know, so just looking, nothing goes on again. So, all right, I pull my head back in, and I'm just looking, I start to lay on my back as I'm looking at the stars. At first, I was on my side, looking up again, and it didn't happen this time. And then again, out the corner of my eye, I see it happen again, but now it happens as like a kind of like a slash. Like it looks now, it looks like a zigzag line. Like it looks, I thought it, now it looked like a spider web caught in the light, like a shimmer of it, and it was kind of like iridescent, like shining. And I'm like, oh, there's. It's just a spider web, you know, I don't kill spiders, so I just let it be, you know, right there. And it wasn't that, because right after that, this little bug comes flying down. And it's like an orb. I thought it was an orb at first. And it's really small, little dot. And it's so bright and shiny. And I'm like, man, that thing's fly, you know, I'm paying attention to it. And it does this weird thing to where it's stretches itself out long like it was a spider web, then goes back to a little orb, then it goes up, down, and it blurs my vision. It makes it hard to see through it, and it kind of seems like a, you know, when you're looking at something in the distance and you see heat waves off the ground shimmering. It was doing this, but this is nighttime, and it's making like a hazy effect in front of my eyes, to where I felt like I had stuff in my eyes, like I felt like my eyes were watery. And so I'm like blinking my eyes now, trying to like back away from it, and then I see it goes up and another one comes, and they're kind of like close to each other. I'm like, oh, this is weird now. So now I close the windows. I close my bedroom window, kitchen window, another window. The only one I left open was my screen window, because I'm like, all right, well, this thing's probably not going to go through the screens. So I left my screen window open, and immediately after that, I'm talking like 2 minutes later, I lay on my back, I start praying to my God, you know, I'm laying on my back, talking to Jehovah, and the air gets freezing cold in here, instantly. I don't know, I just heard something right now. Oh, that was it, that was my story, I gotta go.
That is a first. I'll be honest, I've been waiting for a day when a call was ruined by the very activity being reported, and it seems like it's finally happened. But in all seriousness, I hope our anonymous caller is okay. Thank you for the submission, and thank you for sticking around for the end of the show. Have a good night.